Welcome to the Perfect First Lawyer Podcast, a bi-weekly podcast where we answer questions from you, the 3D printing community. I'm Guy from Guy's Shop, and as always, with me today is my co-host, JJ.
Hello.
Hey, JJ. How you doing, man?
Doing good.
Good, good. And we do depend on your questions for this podcast, so if you have one for us, please go to perfectfirstlawyer.com, go to the submit page and send it. And we also have a Patreon. We only have one level right now. We're simply asking for a small donation to help keep this podcast going. So please go to patreon.com/perfectfirstlawyer. We did have a couple new Patreons this week, and we had a bunch of new questions, which was really great. So if you're listening out there, send us questions. And where do they send us questions, JJ?
You can just email us directly at perfectfirstlayer@gmail.com.
All right. So what do you got going on, JJ? There's a different machine I see.
Yes,
in the
background. So I got a new Lulzbot.
Lulzbot.
Workhorse Plus in this week. And it's a weird machine. I was very much going into it very skeptically because it's a fairly expensive machine. It's a $3,000 machine.
$3,000 bed slinger.
Bed slinger with an upgraded hot end, so probably more than $3,000 if you wanted it. But everything on it is so high quality. Like the build plate, it's got a pretty normal build volume, 285 millimeters, I think. But it's got a thick aluminum plate on there that's like, you can see it's machined down with a ton of like really solid magnets embedded in the machining. The hot end is great. It can melt plastic super well. It uses 2.85 millimeter filament. So all my standard 1.75 millimeter filament doesn't work on this. So I had to order some spare spools. Which was disappointing, but it prints really well. Doing these thick layers at like reasonable speeds versus my weird experiments I've done on my Voron with this thick nozzle. I've got to print at maybe 4 or 5 millimeters per second is what I can get out of my Voron. Mm-hmm. Versus this one is printing at, I would say, 50 to 100, just a normal print profile.
Speed. Yeah. That's the thing with the larger nozzle. A lot of people don't realize when you go up to the larger nozzles, even from like a 0.4 to 0.6, the speed goes down.
Yeah, because your flow rate is really limited.
Yeah,
on most of these hot ends. But this has a very quality hot end that can really melt plastic and get 50 millimeters cubed or something, which doesn't really mean much to me, but it can print thick layers very quickly.
Yeah. So is it like good for prototyping? You think that's really what it's for? Like, is it all hardened steel and all that?
Yeah, it is hardened steel. I think these thick layers are best for just quick things that don't need that precision. Like if you don't need super precise designs, then you can bang them out way quicker with a thicker nozzle like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
How's the print quality?
Good. Very good. Stringing is, you know, not as good as you're going to get on a normal printer. So that's a big downside, but print quality is very good.
Yeah. So it's linear rods.
Yeah. Linear rods on all the axes. But just a bunch of like high quality components everywhere. But it's funny to be back to, it's got the rotary encoder LCD screen like old printers used to have. It's funny to get a printer that doesn't have a touch screen and color display that is more common nowadays.
Does it run Clipper or Marlin?
It's Marlin. It's Marlin. An old Marlin build, yeah.
All right. That's probably good.
Yeah, it's reliable.
You can't mess it up unless you go in there and start, you know, compiling your own firmware.
Yeah, and they've got their own version of Cura as their slicer, but it's the most skinned slicer, I would say, that I've ever used. Of it's Cura, but it feels very different, or it's just very stylized.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Elegoo Cura feels like Cura, but the opening screen is the only thing that's really different. Versus this one, is every single thing is in the Lulzbot bright green. It's the most bright in your face color.
I hope it's got a dark background if it's got all that.
No, it's very really? Bright in your face. It's hard neon green, everything.
Yeah. I pulled up the website on the PC here, and I'm just looking at it. I never really looked at them before. I just saw the price and
yeah. It's not a hobbyist printer.
No.
It feels like in my first, a week of testing now, it's like, this isn't for hobbyists. This is for if you owned a company and you needed support. It's a US-based company and US-based support. You could call them and they would fix it and they would really help you out. Or if you wanted a print farm of like, these things are solid. So many parts on it are 3D printed, so you could replace parts or all these things. I don't know. I'm still working through my thoughts on it.
What's proprietary on it that would be a problem if it broke today?
Proprietary meaning?
Like, is the nozzle proprietary? Is there anything that...
No, it's using Slice Engineering Gamma Master nozzles, and they sent me a few of them, which is the same ones I've been using. It's a Slice Engineering hot end. A lot of parts of it are 3D printed, so if it were to break, I don't know if you could print your own or get the files from them to print another one. It feels easy to repair if something were to break, type thing. But it's very solidly built machine. It's a chunker. Yeah. It's also wide. It's the widest machine. As you can see behind me, it's just for the build volume, it is probably 2K1s wide for a similar build volume.
The build volume is pretty decent. 280 by 280 by
25. Yeah, it's got 280, which is pretty good. But the design is just bed slingers are pretty inefficient for how big of a machine it is versus build volume.
But it's also tried and true technology that people know. Yeah, and
there's nothing really wrong with bed slingers. They still work and
I really don't have anything against bed slingers. But in today's market, I mean, for 50% more of the price than a really good bed slinger, other than the Lulzbot, you can get a pretty decent Core XY machine.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's going to be a lot faster. But there are downsides to it.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it goes to the flow rate of a smaller nozzle, smaller filament diameter. Your quality of print will be way higher on a different printer. This one is going to be low quality prints because you're printing at millimeter plus layer height, I would say. And
what's the thing you like most about it?
Quick printing for thick layers.
For thick layers.
You can print a Benchy is so quick on this thing. All these other prints that I've done are just so quick.
Mm-hmm.
You can print massive things very
quickly. What about the least thing you like the least about it?
If I had to buy it, price.
Yeah.
And usability of an LCD screen and a little scroll wheel to scroll through and press in to select things.
So it doesn't have any like online interface that you can use. It's the screen, period. And it's sneaker net to get the files on it.
You get an SD card. Load it on the SD card, you walk it over to your printer, plug it in, scroll through, press the buttons.
I don't understand why it can't have.
It's a Marlin Wi-Fi. Printer from 5 years ago, software wise.
Wow. It's hard to believe that it's still viable today.
Yeah. I don't know how it is.
I don't know much about the commercial stuff. So
yeah, there's really a lot of commercial market that I don't understand for sure.
Their
use cases or needs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would imagine, you know, we've talked in the past quite heavily about, you know, putting your files in the cloud and stuff like that, which I really don't have a problem with. But, you know, just every printer that I can put stuff in the cloud, I can also just send it directly over to the LAN to my printer and not have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But it's still connected to the cloud.
Yes.
You could have one of those bamboo lab type, my printer started printing in the middle of the night without me knowing thing.
Yeah. A random firmware push that they do and all of a sudden you're printing. Oops.
Yeah. Yeah. I've mentioned before, I've got a pretty decent CNC machine, and when you set it up and hook up the PC to it, they tell you don't ever connect it to the, after you get it working, don't ever connect it to the internet, disable all updates.
Wow.
Because once it works, if it ain't broke,
if it ain't
don't
broke,
fix it. It's not for modders.
Yes.
So yeah. I have a dedicated PC in there, and I've got a reminder in my calendar every 6 months to back it up. So I don't. Yeah. So if it, you know, it's in my garage. It's a PC in the garage.
Yeah.
Nothing could ever happen to it out there.
That's how I am with my Voron. It's the only one that very often has updates. And when I first built it, I was every new update, you know, twice a week updating it. And then you run into one that's like, oh, well, now your config file is incorrect and you've got to change the definition to this or that.
We're going to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Today. So do you want to ask me what I've got going in my lab?
Yeah. Guy, what do you have going on?
My Voron is down. My big Voron.
Oh, no.
2.4. So I am running a CAN bus on it, and it's the I don't know the model number. It's an EBB something from Big Tree Tech, and it's got the Raspberry Pi 2040 MCU in it.
Yeah.
Anyways. So a couple weeks ago, I went to use it, and it worked fine. And then I started to print something else out, and I got this weird error saying it doesn't see the MCU anymore on the CAN bus.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So I go over and look at it, everything's fine. And what I think happened, I'm probably wrong, but I'd moved around the CAN bus wire a little bit. And then it started working again. And then it stopped working. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, maybe I'm just doing something stupid. And I'm messing around in the software, not really in the software, but in the main sale interface.
Yeah.
And I'm in the system tab, and so it's got a bunch of updates. So I'll go ahead and update it just while I'm here, you know?
Yeah. Quick fix.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it upgraded Clipper from version, I think, 11 to 12. And when it updated to 12, of course, it borks the firmware that's in the CAN bus tool head. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a different Clipper version. So it wasn't a big deal. I'm like, okay, I've got the Catapult Bootstrapper software installed on it, so I can just go right in through the interface, do it all right on my computer and flash it, and I'm done, yeah. Right? Well, it won't communicate with the MCU. Just there's no way. So I have to hook up a USB cable to it.
Yeah.
And I flash that, you know, I build the firmware and I flash it. And it started working. I'm like, okay, great.
Oh, good.
Something weird. And then it stopped working. I got the same thing. It can't communicate with the MCU. So I was like, well, it's got to be the cable. Because it's got I put one of those wire glands on the back of it, which is like a flexible rubber thing. And there's a really nasty bend that you have to come out of the CAN bus board to get it up underneath it. Anyways, so I thought, well, maybe it's just the movement and the cord is bad or something. So I ordered a new CAN bus cord from Big Tree Tech, which actually came very fast. About a week came from China.
Oh,
very
wow.
Impressive. Yeah. So anyways, so I'm thinking about it, and I said, well, maybe, and I'm looking online, and there's the real problem. As I look online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the printer knows when you're about to replace it.
Yeah. So I'm looking at it, and I said, all these people are having problems with the RP2040 CAN bus.
Mm.
Communication issues. I'm like, well, okay. And, you know, I figure most of that is just user error.
Yeah.
90% of it anyways. But there's 10% of it's probably true. There's probably some kind of problem. So yeah. I said, okay, well, while I'm at it, I might as well, you know, because a new CAN bus board. So they're only like $25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not like $300 or something like that. So I said, well, I'll order another board too. So while I was looking at the board online, I saw an upgrade for the extruder. They have a new extruder they call the Galileo 2,
ooh,
which has been out for a while, I guess. But what it is it's it uses the same mechanics and sizes that the LDO Orbiter 2 uses. So it's like a clone of that.
Yeah.
So I bought that kit too. So I printed out the stuff, and actually just today I put the extruder together. I gotta take half the machine apart to get that cable rerun and everything. So
yeah.
Long story short, what should have been something very simple turned into something as a major project. And now I'm thinking about, well, while I've got it out in the shop and I've got it turned up on its back, maybe mm-hmm. I'll do this and maybe I'll do that.
One more.
So yeah, it'll be a 2-month project now.
Yeah.
Just one more reason for my wife to yell at me. Why aren't you outside the yard doing yard work?
That's the boron for you.
Yeah. Thank God.
Uh-huh.
But you know, we talked about this last podcast. I like doing that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's not a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And thankfully, most of that stuff is fairly inexpensive. It's not crazy expensive.
Yeah. And Big Tree Tech, I like that a lot of their products are fairly reasonable.
Yeah.
This or that. It's not, oh, $100 here, $100 there. It's $30 here, $20 there.
Yeah. I buy a lot direct from them instead mm-hmm. of buying it through Amazon.
Yeah.
And it's even, you know, you buy something that maybe is like $40, $50. It's only like $5, $6 to have it shipped.
Yeah.
And it's here pretty quick.
Uh-huh.
But it's half the price it is on Amazon.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I haven't actually looked at their stuff on Amazon. So, yeah, that's.
Now, every now and then I'll buy something from Amazon from them because I need it like now.
Yeah.
I've got a fan that breaks emergency.
And it's like, I need this fan something now.
I've got 6 printers. I can't use any of them. I've got this one that doesn't work and I want to use that one.
Yeah.
So I got to have this now.
That's when you need it now. But I saw you also have the Konami screen on your home. Yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nomi or Konami or whatever it is. Yeah, it's
however
just
it's pronounced.
It just looks cool.
Yes. I've been thinking about putting, because I've seen mods to put it on the K1 or even putting it on my Voron.
Yeah.
Purely for the it looks cool factor.
Yeah. All the only thing you need to hook it up is 5 volts.
Yeah.
It's all Wi-Fi.
Wireless. Yeah.
Yep. So you can put it on your desk if you want to.
Oh. I hadn't thought about that. That's.
There are people that have done that. They've made like a little stand to put on their desk.
A little stand on your desk. Yeah.
Yeah. Big. Huh. Did you watch any of the videos when people was at the when they're at the Rocky Mountain Rap Festival?
A few, but not that many.
Those Big Tree Tech came out with a bunch of new stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I'm right now on their website when you mentioned the extruder.
Yeah. They have these new macro buttons that go in the Voron grid work in the front. They're kind of cool. They're really cheap. They have a new eddy current sensor that's kind of like the beacon.
Yeah,
I don't think it's as fast, but it works with that. And they came out with a couple other things. They came out with a CAN bus board that you can up the CAN bus to, but then have multiple things hooked up to it. They are coming out with their own Enraged Rabbit Care Feeder kit. So I guess I'll have to snag one of those.
That's good. Everyone is working on multi-material. That's,
yeah, that's the next
the new hotness.
Thing. Yeah. Sure. Well, that one's kind of nice because it does. I think it has like 8 or 9 slots in it.
Yeah.
Just the base one, the new one, the ERCF2.
Yeah.
I think it's got like 8 or 9. I can't remember. But that's a lot of different filaments.
Yeah.
And I do have the room for it here in my office, kind of.
Yeah. I wonder if they could design it differently if, for most of us, if we're not using it for multi-material, but more just easy filament selection.
Yeah.
If the design could be a lot simpler or easier to implement type thing.
Well, I don't think it's...
I wonder.
It's not that expensive. You can buy complete kits for like $140.
Yeah.
All you got to do is print the parts out. It looks pretty interesting. I mean, I really dislike having to, every time I print something, I say, oh, I want to print this. I want this color.
Yeah.
I got to change it out. So I just printed a color I don't want.
Uh-huh.
Not that that should be a big thing, but it is. It is what it is, you know? So... And that's why, that's the main reason I have the AMS on my bamboo printer, just because I've got, you know, PETG in one, ABS in another, and then PLA in the other two, and they're all different colors. And it's like, okay, if I want some specific color, and that's really easy to change the filament in.
Yeah.
Because you just pull the thing out and you stick another one in there. Just
slide it out, slide it in.
You don't have to heat up nozzles. You don't have to do any of that crap.
Yeah.
So... I look at the thing for the Voron of being able to put it on there and just have, you know, like I said, like 8 or 9 filaments sitting there and just ready to go.
What you want in the software while you're sitting at your desk. I think that's what you said, a large reason why I use the bamboo printer so much. It's like, oh, I want this printed in red.
Yep.
But all my Creality printers are green, yellow, blue. Well, I got to go in the other room and preheat and change the filament, or I can just click a button in the bamboo software and it'll print that out in red.
Yep. Yeah. That is really convenient. I don't do much. I've only done maybe multicolor printing, maybe a handful of times.
Yeah.
It's just so slow.
It's
so slow.
It's every print is twice as much filament. And twice as much time, at least twice as much time.
The time with me isn't a big deal. I'd rather have a good print, but still, I mean, something taking an hour and 5 minutes versus 3 hours and using twice the amount of filament. It's like, really?
It's like, I don't need that. Occasionally, sure, it's fun. But for the majority, it's like, I don't care.
Yeah, I just don't care either. All right. So are you ready to get in some questions?
Yeah.
We've talked for almost 25 minutes and not really taken any. All right. Our first question here comes from Justin. Justin's got the world's best email address. I'm not going to say it on the air. But he's got a real good email address. He says, hey, fellas, I live in Stony Plain, Alberta. Oh, Canada. And the temp likes to swing a solid 80 degrees Celsius over the year. I'm doing a new stereo build for my car, and I want to put my lowly Ender 3 Neo to work. It's modded to all heck, and I can put it in my workshop if I need a heated chamber. Now, here's my question. In the summer, it's not unusual to see north of 35 Celsius, 95 Fahrenheit, which means in car temps, which can be parked, can reach up to 125 degrees or 50 degrees Celsius. Now, will PETG survive this? Or do I need to go with ABS? I'd Google it, but I'd much rather listen to Guy accuse Nathan of making up words while JJ prints a golden toilet in the background. He also says, I'll be making speaker pods that live on the dash next to the A-pillar. Normally, I do wooden fiberglass. Cheers. So, what do you think, JJ? Will PETG survive?
Trying to do some Googling now.
we'll do the Googling for him.
What the transition temperature is. Because it seems like some people, if he gets that hot, could have some issues with PETG. If you want to be super safe, ABS is great.
And if you want UV protection, get, which you're probably going to need, print it in ASA. Yes.
Also, if you're in the car, ASA is great.
And PETG has ultraviolet properties, doesn't it, too? Where it,
I think it, so. It's fairly good.
I believe it's so.
Definitely better than PLA.
Or ABS.
Yes, or ABS. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because ABS can deform. And so, ASA might be your best option for in-car prints.
So, if you had an Ender 3 Neo, how would you attempt to print ASA on it?
Yeah. Put it in a big box.
Cardboard box method?
Whether it's cardboard box or a different material.
They have those fireproof things that you can put over the printers too.
Yeah, I've seen various polycarbonate boxes or, you know, this or that.
I've just seen fabric with a foil liner on the inside. I think
it doesn't take much to keep the heat in.
Yeah, and I, from what I understand too, it's not really, well, with ABS, it is a matter more than anything else of like enclosing it off from any extra wind, right?
Yes, yeah.
Because that can cause problems.
Uh-huh.
Where one layer cools differently than the other layer or I can't explain it right because I'm not good at that stuff. But ASA needs a heated chamber.
Yeah.
Right.
They can have issues with that for sure of non-uniform cooling that really can warp the print.
Yeah. I never even tried ASA until I got my Chitty Tech.
Yeah.
With the heated
chamber. I had tried it and never had good results until I finally got a good printer with a good build chamber on it.
What kind of problems did you have with it?
Just warping issues with that, of it pulling off of the build plate a little bit, in that the build plate wasn't quite hot enough, or that non-uniform cooling of it, of a few layers up, it starts cooling and contracting, and then it just rips itself off the build plate. But then with I feel like even the K1 was good. The K1 Max was great at ASA printing. And the Chidi as well with that heated chamber did great.
Yeah.
But not... if I had to print it on it, Ender 3 Neo, putting it in a box could work, I think.
I don't see why it wouldn't.
Yeah. Glue stick is will be your best friend in this case.
Yeah. Don't be afraid. Well, you can also put it inside a cardboard box and get a little plate and put it in the corner and put a little start a little fire in there to heat up the chamber. No, I know, like on my, I do it on my Voron, both my Vorons, mm-hmm. and I do it on the K1 too, where I've printed some ASA, where I just turn the bed heater on and let the chamber heat up from the bed and let it go for like an hour or something like that. And it gets pretty warm in there. The Creality gets in the 40s.
Yeah, it gets warm.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people were complaining about that one having panel gaps. But it gets hot. It gets really hot, even with whatever gaps people are complaining about.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you know, people complain about anything, I guess.
Sure.
So I think we're both on board with giving ASA a try.
Yeah.
For his application.
ASA or ABS. But even if you can't get those to work, PETG might work.
Yeah. And that's the you said the transition temperature?
Yeah, the glass transition temperature.
I've heard that.
That's what people mention.
So that's the temperature where it starts to break down again.
It starts to move.
Okay. Movement is a bad thing.
Movement is bad in this case. And so if you can't get ABS or ASA to work on your printer, and you can only get a PETG to work, I don't know. Personally,
Maybe you can design it and prototype it with your printer and then find somebody that's willing to print it out for you.
Or that, yeah.
Yeah, that's always an option. I know there's a lot though, like PCB Way and JLB.
JLC, PCB. Yeah, so you could get it professionally printed.
Yeah.
Or from a local person who owns a 3D printer with an enclosure, for sure.
Yep. So I hope that helps out, Justin. This next question is from Jim, and I kind of like this question. He says, I originally purchased a Prusa printer with the understanding that I can continuously upgrade it through available kits as new versions are released. However, I'm beginning to question whether this approach is truly beneficial. Do you believe it's sensible for Prusa to design the MK5 in a manner that allows full upgrading from the MK4? Or could the strategy be inadvertently and hindering significant in or could the strategy be inadvertently hindering significant innovation? Wow, that's hard to say. I think that's a really good question because I know they had the only thing I remember back to is like the Mark II, and then went to the 2.5, then went to the 3, and then it's the 3.5 and the 4. And they're all basically the same printer, mechanically speaking. There's just been upgrades on the way, mostly on the extruder, hasn't it been? And other little things too. You never had a Prusa, did you?
Yeah, so I've never had a Prusa. But I think, and it's funny, I don't know Prusa's big brain decisions, but I thought the XL would be more of a thing, but they've struggled with that, has had delays and such. I think they should keep the Mark III, Mark IV, keep going with that because these upgrades have had pretty good upgrades to it. It seems like from people who have them. But then they should also create a separate line that is their Core XY style of the Prusa XL, they're calling it now. Maybe call it a Prusa Medium and make it a more normal sized one extruder Core XY printer. Yeah, an enclosed this or that, but make it a Prusa. Yeah. And because Betzlinger still has a lot of great potential to it. Like, it's still a great prints.
Yeah. Situation. I mean, you've got a very expensive Betzlinger back there.
I got a new one right behind me. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but you look at the Lulzbot that we were talking about when we started this, that's a completely different animal as far as a Betzlinger goes than a Prusa Betzlinger is.
Mm, yeah.
You know what I mean? I think one of the reasons, and I could be wrong, but I think one of the reasons a lot of people buy Prusas is because of the company itself.
Yeah.
And they do have a very good reputation. I can't say anything bad against them. I haven't really dealt with them either. But I think if I did have to deal with them, I think it would be fine. I think it would be a good experience.
I think if they gave people a hard time, then their reputation would be tainted.
And they would take
the reason they have a good community reputation is because they help people fix their problems.
So, but we have talked about this before too, which is the viability of Prusa's Betzlingers in today's market conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at the Mark IV right now, it's what, $800-$900?
Yeah.
Something like that. That's expensive for a Betzlinger.
Yeah.
When you can get an enclosed Core XY printer for, well under $900 and get a good one. You can get a Bamboo, you get one of the Creality ones, you can get the Flash Forge. There's a bunch of good ones out there. The Chitty or whatever is pretty good.
Yeah.
From what I've worked with anyways. Mm-hmm. So is that, do you think that'll continue to be a thing where they're just going to take the same machine and every 3 or 4 years upgrade it to something else?
I don't know how far it goes. Thinking of it, could it go forever? Probably not.
No, nothing goes forever.
Could it go another 5 years? Probably. Like, of how much they upgraded from the Mark III to the Mark IV. It was like, this upgrading the software a ton, the hardware, this or that. And having different levels of upgrade, I think, was really cool for people who have a Mark III to be able to get various levels of a Mark IV for whatever features they want or don't want.
Yeah, there's like a 3.5 or a 4.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the difference was. I think it had to do with the extruder.
And I do feel like they could probably do it for a Mark V. I don't know what all goes into it, of putting a new control board in there, putting a new this or that, since I don't know the exact hardware or hardware limitations they're working with on that. But I don't think Betzlinger is dead. I don't think it's a...
Absolutely not.
Yeah. And so if the limitation being it's a Betzlinger, I think they can keep upgrading a Betzlinger to make it a better Betzlinger by adding more sensors, more better parts on it, this or that.
Whatever voodoo that they do.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. That makes sense. I myself don't think Betzlingers are going to go bye-bye either.
Yeah.
But I really do believe that they're going to be relegated to the lower tiers of 3D printing. Mm-hmm. And the Lulzbot is going to have to get with the times a little bit, and it's still do the thing, you know, I'm just picking on Lulzbach because I'm looking at the printer over your shoulder. They can still have all the things that make the Lulzbach attractive, but do it in a Core XY package.
Yes. Yeah. I think that, and also with the Prusa, I think Prusa should make a Core XY printer to go alongside their Mark III, Mark IV. I don't know what else to call it versus just the Prusa Mark IV, whatever it's called. But I think they should have both because there are some benefits and like things you can do and benefits for like a bed slinger needs more space. It's got a bed that's moving back and forth versus the space savings, especially for a print farm, which seems like what both of these printers are kind of targeted at.
The Core XY or the bed slingers?
The Core XY, like a Core XY seems to take up less space on the table versus a bed slinger.
Okay.
And Prusa and Lulzbach are both kind of targeting these industrial professional print farms.
Yeah.
And seems like in that case, size or space matters. If you can print, if you can fit more printers on the shelf, then you can print more things on your print farm.
That's true. But I think also that the bed slingers type printers are definitely, you know, you can get some pretty good deals on some of these, you know, like the Ender V3 SE. Is that it? One that's like
that's
around $200, less than $200.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a little printer.
Oh, yeah.
For the price. You could buy four of those for the price of one Prusa.
Yeah. Personally, if I was building a print farm, I'd get a bunch of Ender 3 V3 SEs
and
fill my shelves with those because price is very important.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the a lot of the parts are, not all of them, but some of them can just be easily gotten.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
All right. There's one other question I wanted to get to. And this is from Ben. And Ben, I thought this was interesting. What are your thoughts on the best base or location for a printer? Something soft to absorb vibration or hard and heavy to be sturdy? Or a layering of different materials. What are your thoughts on that, JJ? Would you have something that's more wobbly or something that's stiffer?
So this is an interesting question I haven't thought about in kind of a while since input shaping has become common on pretty much every printer out there. But this totally used to be a thing of the putting your printer on a concrete slab and then putting that slab on top of a dampening material, or whether you should invert those, put it on the dampening spring material and then that spring material on top of a concrete block, to reduce vibrations in your prints, and a lot of complexities. Input shaping solves most of those basically.
Yeah.
And so nowadays, if your printer does have input shaping, I don't worry about it. I just rerun your input shaping on a different table. The table I run most of my test prints on is a really wobbly table on wheels behind me that I film all my videos on.
Is that one of those adjustable height desks?
It's got a desk adjustable. It's a Husky table from Lowe's, or Home Depot or Lowe's.
Home Depot.
But it can go up and down, and thus it's not very stable because it can go up and down, which is a great way to test your printer. Kind of a worst case scenario It yeah. wobbles a ton.
It was Angus from Maker's Muse that actually took an A1 Mini and suspended it in air while it printed.
Yeah.
Because I just remember that now. Because somebody had put in one of the comments of one of his videos. He said, your table's shaking so much, it's going to cause problems with the printer. And he's like, no, it won't. My printers do that because they're all on that same shaky thing. Uh-huh. And so he hung one from the ceiling.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, moving around and, you know, blowing in the wind kind of thing. And it worked fine.
Yeah.
Didn't have a problem. I don't know if I really have an opinion on this one way or another. The way I see it, I agree with you. The input shaping solved a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I prefer to have my printers on the most stable base possible.
Mm-hmm.
So like here in my office, I have my big Voron sits on a cabinet I made that's very sturdy. Mm. I've got printers that actually kind of sit on my floor.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain, but I have built a nice wooden thing that sits on top of the floor and the printers sit on that. And out in the garage, they sit on the bed of my CNC machine, which is really, really super sturdy. I can get them off of there in like 5 minutes if I want to use the CNC machine. So it's not a big deal. But that thing just doesn't move at all. It's rock solid. I look at it as I want to introduce as little wiggle as possible to the printer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The printer is going to wiggle enough by itself.
It is kind of interesting the dichotomy of solid material you're putting it on or a dampening material. In the other room behind me it's kind of got rubber gym floor type mats on the mm-hmm. ground. So it's kind of is that dampening those vibrations versus putting it on a rock solid material? And thus those vibrations are more jarring to the material, to the printer. Kind of the discussion back and forth. Either way, if you run Input Shaper, you're going to clear out whatever resonant frequencies you have with that printer.
And that's what Input Shaper is supposed to do.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it cancels out the vibrations of that. Mm-hmm. So,
which can be really funny if you run it. I've run it on a wobbly table and then you put it on the floor and print something and you get horrible results because it's compensating. It's reverse compensating for horrible vibrations.
Yeah. Well, every time I move a printer from one spot to the other, I always run Input Shaper.
Yes. Yeah. But when I forget, it's like, well, that shows how much it is doing in that other situation.
You know, it's kind of funny to say that. I say that so easily. If I just move my printer, I just run Input Shaper. All my printers have Input Shaper now.
Yes.
They all run Clipper.
Yeah.
I got rid of some printers. So they all run Clipper. They all, run Input. They have Input Shaping built into them. So it's nice.
Yes. Yeah.
It's nice.
Oh, yeah.
It's a luxury. It's a luxury. So I guess the answer, what's the answer to Ben's question? I don't know if there is one.
Something sturdy, but also I've seen the arguments of a dampening material can help. And whether it's a dampening material on top or bottom, I feel like there's a CNC Kitchen video explaining the differences of dampening material on top or bottom.
Well, he did a video a long time ago about using concrete pavers.
Yeah. And I used concrete pavers for a while until nowadays Input Shaper kind of solves that issue.
Now, my Ender 5 that I, pretty much, I want to say tricked out. That had the squash balls underneath.
Oh, you really went full squash
balls. So it did vibrate a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I used Input Shaper on that, and I said that machine was a PLA beast. I mean, it did. It wasn't super fast by any stretch of the imagination, but it printed really, really well. And I liked those feet. That kind of gave it a little bit of spring.
Keeps it up off the ground, makes it easy to clean.
But I wonder if those, something like that, or a material that's a dampening material underneath, could actually help the Input Shaper.
Yeah, I've seen people put them on even like bamboo printers to help add more spring ability to the printer.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And so that way the Input Shaper can do more. But in general, I don't know. My bamboo printers are on just a normal table and they print great. So,
I agree.
Yeah.
I don't look at that as hard as I used to.
Yes. It totally used to be a thing.
Yeah. Not so much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right. I think that's going to do it for this episode. That was a nice conversation. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
So remember, guys, we really need questions and participations from you, the listeners. So make sure to go to perfectfirstlayer.com, go to the submit page and ask us. Or you can send us an email. What's that email again, JJ?
perfectfirstlayer@gmail.com.
Sweet. And where can people find you out there in the internet world?
I'm out there on YouTube at JJ Shankles. That's how you can find me.
And I can be found at Guy's Shop on YouTube and Guy's Wood Shop, just about, and everything else. So, all right. I guess we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Bye.
See ya.